Thank you for joining me for another UnleashingFreedom.com podcast. This is Richard Wells. Noted author, historian, and university founder Oliver DeMille recently stated, "Freedom lovers are losing because they've been trained to think sensus solum. This type of thinking stifles creativity, inhibits innovation, creates cultural rigidity, and fails to sway the thinking populace." Now stick with me, he's not speaking Greek or conspiracy theory. He's actually speaking Latin. And seriously, he's identifying a major threat to freedom, our thinking. Literally interpreted, sensus solum means one sense or one interpretation. Just consider our predominant approach to education today and see if it doesn't line up. We sit in a class, take dictation from a teacher, or memorize, quote, facts from a textbook. We retain that data long enough on our brain to regurgitate it on a test and eagerly await the computer scan of our multiple choice answer sheet. Ah, we proclaim a passing score! And so we head off to celebrate with brain-numbing activity before repeating the same process over and over again until graduation, successfully maneuvering a system while avoiding critical thinking. Now, according to DeMille, a true freedom thinker breaks free from this pattern to study sensus plenior, searching for a, quote, fuller meaning in all things. Reading the writings of the American founders and the authors who inspired them, one can't help but discover that their search for meaning went much deeper than a surface interpretation of, say, the Bible, for instance. Religious beliefs aside, the study of the Bible is an interesting microcosm of this very point. Today, a sensus solum trained society hears a teacher proclaim that the founders were not religious men, the student marks it on a test, the computer scans the answer correct, and history is erased. Now, whether learning about the Bible or the Communist Manifesto, this approach to thinking does affect freedom. After all, in this process, no one stops to question the founders themselves or study how they read, interpreted, and frequently quoted from the inspiring and historic document known as the Bible. And heaven forbid we actually read from the Bible to decide for ourselves if we agree or disagree with their interpretation. Now, this could be said for many other works, but let's be controversial and illustrate with the story of Moses in the Old Testament. According to the Bible, Moses was raised in Pharaoh's house for 40 years and was groomed to be a ruler in Egypt. But when he killed an Egyptian taskmaster in defense of an Israelite slave, he was forced to flee into the desert where he lived another 40 years before returning to Egypt at God's command to deliver the Israelites from bondage. Unbelievably miraculous events occur in order to deliver Israel from the Egyptians' clutches. Now, the truth of that matter can only come from God. So let's set that aside for another discussion and focus on the challenge Moses had in governing millions of former slaves en route to a new land. Now, the incredible miracles required to deliver Israel from the hands of a vicious tyrant are no more miraculous, however, than trying to establish a pattern of good governance under which an enslaved people could truly live free. Here, the founders noted that this story had a wider message than just its powerful religious symbolism and instruction. It also contained a message on government, and so they searched for multiple meanings. Moses' paradigm on governance, remember, was based on ruler's law, the pattern set forth in his first 40 years of schooling in Pharaoh's house. And he almost killed himself trying to be solely responsible for solving all of Israel's problems. The Bible records that he was involved in solutions for things ranging from agriculture, bartering, census, clothing, complaints, construction, deaths, diet, discipline, education, religion, revenue, taxes, travel, welfare, and much, much more. Sounds a little bit like our executive branch today. Well, perhaps this was necessary for a time to help a mass of former slaves transition from subservience to freedom. But this top-down management was not really freedom. In the end, it was Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, a man who was neither a slave or a former citizen of Egypt, who brought a different paradigm. It was a model of representative government where responsibility was shared throughout society all the way down to the family. It emphasized a strong local government where freedom was supported at the foundation of society rather than solely by the dictates of the governing few rulers at the top. Now, you may embrace the Bible and the story of the Exodus as divinely inspired, or you may believe it nothing more than a legend like those found in Greek mythology. Again, I refer you to God for your answer. But either way, there is more to be learned from the story than first meets the eye. Historical writings of the founders of America indeed prove that they drew extensively from the Bible when setting up a form of government that has produced the freest and most prosperous people in the history of the world. And yet its study in our schools has been suppressed. A sensus solum thinker accepts this restriction because that is what was dictated to him. But a sensus plenior thinker questions the restriction and its true effect on freedom. And I simply ask, will you please think about it?